And of course, you realize this is a very easy parsha to make very boring. And that's not my fault. I can only work with the material that I'm given. So the problem with this week and to a great extent next week's parsha is that, one, they're technical in terms of the building and the materials and so on. And second, that they're repetitive because we've already heard a number of these things. So I guess we could have dealt with either one, but if it's a really good story and told again, then you can compare it to the other story. But if it's repeating technical things makes it somewhat difficult. So there is a larger theme that I think is here beneath the surface, and I want to try to put my finger on it. I'm going to, really lead in a very particular direction. But first, let's get a little bit more context. And over here, we, in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Dalet, which is right after the beginning of the parasha, Moshe gathers them together, and the first thing they're told about is Shabbat, which is quite important in terms of the derivation of laws of Shabbat from the Mishkan and so on, the word Melacha, what is Melacha? And over here, the difference, again, if we'll notice, the difference between what is happening in Parshat Vayakel versus Truma or Tetzaveh, and in very broad strokes, I can say that Vayakel is a repetition of Truma and that Pekudeh is a repetition of Tetzaveh. Again, broad strokes. The difference over here is that in Truma, it's God speaking to Moshe, and over here in Vayakel, it's Moshe speaking to the people. So right there, the directionality is somewhat different. So it's, in a sense, it's the word coming down from heaven to Moshe, and now or maybe Moshe's in heaven at the time, but the word going from God, from the infinite to man, and now it's from Moshe going and flowing over to the people. So right then, it does make a difference, and maybe every single thing now that we read, we're going to read differently. The other thing that, because of this point, that we're going to have is they're going to have a response of the people, which means the people now become involved, and we're going to understand, the human side of these things as well. And when it comes to the human side of things, then we will try to find something which we can say about this. When we begin in Lamed Hei and read the instructions, Vayomer Moshe el kol adat b'nei Yisrael. So this is one of these things that we never really pay attention to. Maybe we should. What's the difference when it uses the word adat as opposed to not using the word adat? What is it, kol kahal b'nei Yisrael versus adat b'nei Yisrael? So I'm not answering that question. I'm just raising it. Who is Moshe speaking to? Is he speaking to everybody? Is this going to be men, women, and children who are being spoken to? Or is this perhaps going to be just men, just women, just adult men, just leaders? So when it says it's kol adat b'nei Yisrael, it sort of sounds very inclusive. It sort of sounds like it is large, although, again, we would be somewhat at loss if we were forced to say the difference between this and some of the other terms which are sometimes used. Kol kahal b'nei Yisrael, just for an example. Congregation, was it a congregation versus adat? So, ze devar she'tziva Hashem lemor. So this is what God commanded. So essentially, now we're taking the command from God to Moshe and we're giving it over to the people. Kichu me'itchem, truma l'Hashem, kol nediv libo yivieha et trumat Hashem, zahav v'chesev nechoshet. So what's interesting here is aside from, again, and you could go back and compare this to Vayichuli Truma, right? The very beginning of Parsha Truma. And there is something to note about that, which I'm sure at some point we made mention of. There, Daber B'nei Yisrael Vayichuli Truma. What I find interesting about that form, whether it's on purpose or an accident, or maybe it's just our later association with it, it sounds very much like a marriage. Right? Harayat mekudeshet li, v'chuli truma, take me. How do marriages, kicha, kicha, stay efon, v'yikach ishet isha. V'chuli truma, very much, to me at least, has at the back of it some type of a relationship. It's not just v'chuli truma. It's a very interesting form. And as I said, now it's being said over the people. The other thing which perhaps should have been connected to this is when God, back in Perek Yutet, speaks about taking the people or the children of Israel as his quote-unquote chosen people, treasured people. And we have some similar type of language which was being used over there as well. Let me see if I can quickly find it. Yeah. Yutet hei. Vata im shemoa tishmu'u bikoli Ushmartem et briti, v'hiyitem li skula. So also that li, v'hiyitem li skula, you should become a treasure for me. I mean, v'atem tihu li mamlechet konim v'goy kadosh, v'atem tihu li. It's again, it's this li over here, which very much sounds like a marriage proposal. So there is a theme of a marriage proposal and a wedding taking place in terms of Matan Torah. And then there is a theme in terms of building the Mishkan afterwards. Once you get married, you need a place to live. I know that, you know, previously we spoke about, at least this year, about after Matan Torah, we need a place, just functionally, you need a place to put the Luchot. But maybe it's more than that. Once you get married, so you can't go, you need a place to live. And I'm just saying that the turns of phrase over here, which I am admitting could be totally my imagination, or the other possibility is that when the formula was put together about how you go about getting married, Hare Yat Mikudeshet Li, maybe it was created with overtones of Matan Torah on the one hand and of the building the Mishkan on the other hand. So I'm just saying that those elements are there, and we're going to see where this takes us. Going back again to our source this week, as Moshe relays the information, K'chume itchem truma laHashem, kol nediv libo. So how would you translate nediv libo? Anybody from the generosity of their hearts, perhaps. Kol nediv libo, yivet trumat Hashem zahav kesef nechoshet. Which essentially means that if you want to make this donation, it has to be done with a full heart, it has to be done with your own volition, it has to be done with your own generosity. Pasuk Vav and Zayin and Chet and Tet talk about the various types of things which need to be brought. And then Pasuk Yud, V'kol chacham lev b'chem, yavo v'ya'asu et kol asher tziva Hashem. So the difference between the Nediv Libo versus the chacham lev, the Nediv Libo is the one who has generosity of heart, and they're the ones who do the donations. The chacham lev is the one, and wisdom of heart, although we just note, on both formulations, you have at the center there the word heart, which is interesting. Nediv libo and chacham libo. And the word I'm not sure why it was, again, really necessary, but it's interesting that Ziv v'chol chacham lev are going to be the people that are going to be the artisans who are going to make it. Yavo v'ya'asu et kol asher tziva Hashem. So they're the ones who are going to go about and do the construction or the making the materials. Or take the materials and make them into the Kelim, or the Mishkan itself. Yitzu kol b'nei Yisrael, it's skipping a bit to Pasuk Kaf, milafnei Moshe, which means they just got their instructions, and now we're going to have the next stage. This is actually the third stage. Stage one is God saying to Moshe. Stage two is Moshe saying to the people. Stage three is the implementation of what God said to Moshe, Moshe said to the people, and that starts in Pasuk Kaf Aleph. V'yivu kol ish asher nis'u libo, v'kol asher nidva rucho. So do you like that now our metaphors have been mixed, because instead of following with the Nediv Libo, it went over to Asher Nis'u Libo. So those of you who like to keep track of such things, if you were to, again, try to keep your place in this first source, but let your eyes wander down to Pasuk Hei in the second source, which is Unkelos, and he translates Nediv Libo as the Yitra'e Libe, which would mean heart's desire, which would be Nediv Libo. And then when he gets to Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Asher Nis'u Libo, he translates it as the Itra'e Libe, with the exact same phrase, which then leaves us somewhat confounded as to why he would translate Nediv Libo and Nis'u Libo as identical concepts. But over here, what happened to the Nadav, or the Nediv Libo, from the first source, well, that's the next phrase now, Nedva Rucho. So what's the difference between Nis'u Libo versus Nedva Rucho? So that we need to pay attention. But let's just read that whole pasuk again, Kaf Aleph. V'yavo kol ish asher nis'u libo, v'kol asher nedva rucho, oto yviu et trumat Hashem l'mlechet omod, l'chol avodato ul'vgdei hakodesh. So it was a long sentence, but we'll need to understand it. And now Kaf Bet, so make sure that we focus correctly, which I think is the most important one that we will deal with today. V'yavo anashim al hanashim. Now that itself is a very strange formulation. V'yavo hanashim al hanashim. Now the word al is what troubles us. And the men Vayavoa anashim, and the men brought al hanashim. So what does al hanashim mean? So I'm not going to try to translate it now, because each one of the commentaries are going to try to do that themselves. But that phrase may be quite significant. Vayavoa anashim al hanashim kol nediv lev. So of course you've noticed with the nediv lev, we've gone back to the first formulation, and again you can anticipate how Unkelus will translate that, which will be in Kaf Bet. So Ditrei Libe. So Unkelus had an easy job over here. I guess they just put the same phrase in and just use it time and time again. But it continues, Vayavoa anashim al anashim kol nediv lev, hiviyu chach v'nezem v'tabat v'chumaz, kol klei zahav v'kol ish asher hiniv tenufa zahav l'ashem. So over here, the end of the verse speaks about the men having brought something, but what does this mean, Vayavoa anashim al anashim? The men brought on the women. I mean, does that literally mean that they dragged the women over, or the women with their volition? Kol nediv lev is the husband, or is the man? Is the nediv lev about the female? Is it the woman, the wife? Exactly what did we just now read? So that to me is interesting. And Kaf Gimel goes back, v'kol isha shenim tza'itot chelet. We go back to men, so why were women mentioned in Kaf Bet and not in Kaf Gimel? And then if we skip a little bit, not and go to Kaf Hei, and Kaf Hei says, v'kol isha chachmat lev b'yadea tavo. And any woman, again, chachmat lev now, so if it's chachmat lev, you already know what chachmat lev is, yes? Well, but how is that used as opposed to nediv lev? Those are the people that are doing the work. So here it tells you something which is important, that the women were also actively involved in the creation of the various materials in the making of the Mishkan. I'm going to ask you a question, which I don't expect or want an answer to, but if you really want an answer, then you can come to my shir between Mincha and Maariv on Shabbat afternoon this week. Is a woman allowed to be involved in the production of a Sefer Torah in any way? Could a woman write a Sefer Torah? So there the halacha is fairly straightforward. What about, okay, v'kol isha chachmat lev v'dea tavu. So this is talking about some kind of a weaving process. Is a woman allowed to sew? First of all, could she make the threads, which will then be used in order to, she weave and make the threads, which will then be used in order to sew together the parchment of the Sefer Torah. Moreover, is a woman allowed to sew the very, let's say a woman can't write the Sefer Torah, can she sew one piece of parchment to the next piece of parchment? And I'll ask the women in the room, if you were told that you were allowed to do this, is this something which would interest you in terms of actually being involved actively in producing a Sefer Torah? I think this is very interesting, because you just now should have noticed that in terms of making the Mishkan, now you can make a Kal V'chomer, like you need a thumb like this, which doesn't always work, because you could say, hold it, if a woman's allowed to make the Mishkan itself, making a Sefer Torah, it would be easy, but making a Sefer Torah may be the issue of the writing, but maybe because the writing is derived out from Tefillin, Ukshartim, Uvachtavtem, whoever puts it on is obligated to write it. The same thing may be true about the Torah, which is probably true about the Torah. I can even go further, it is true about the Torah, but what about the sewing itself? Should the sewing be a problem? And for that matter, there's also another issue. Forget about sewing the parchment together. What about sewing the parchment onto the wood handles itself? So, any woman want to donate a Sefer Torah, and I'll let you sew it, just let me know, and we'll discuss it. But this is something which, I'll just put it like this, there's no question in the world that there was a custom like this. This was a custom. And it was certainly a custom in Europe. And what they would do is that, just like today, when they would finish a Torah, they would, at the very end, they, you know, would give a couple people the quill to write the last couple of letters, give them the honor. They would also give the woman a needle and thread. Maybe some of you would be insulted with that, and let them sew the last. You like it. So, and then there are others who, again, the custom existed. So the only question is going to be among the poskim, or those who are going to say, and what in the world are these Jews doing, and how can they do such a thing, and this is clearly not allowed, or the poskim are saying, well, this is clearly the custom, and what in the world is going to be the problem with such a thing, and this is a beautiful thing. So that's essentially going to be the argument that takes place. If you want to find a permissive view, then you will look in the Aruch HaShulchan. If you want to look at somebody else who has a permissive view, you'll look in the Tzitz Eliezer, and now I basically ruined my shir for you, so you don't have to come on Shabbos. Okay. I'd answer the question. But to be a sofer would be more problematic, because there is this association between ukshartim uchatavtim, that whoever can put on the tefillin can write the tefillin, and that's used for all kitvei kodesh. The only question would be by a Megillat Esther, where there should be no reason whatsoever that a woman couldn't write a Megillat Esther. by all other things that would be a problem of kshartim uktaftim. That would be an issue. V'kol isha chachmat leiv biyadeha tavu. So again, we went from the women, the men on the women, back to the men, back to the women. Now, v'kol nashim asher nasu libam, otna b'chochma tavu ha'izim. So again, anytime we get to this phrase of, although it's changed a little, it was chachmat lev, now it's nasa libam, which, by the way, may help us go backward and understand before when we had the double usage, what pasuk was that? Back in Kaf Aleph, Kol Isha Sher Nasu Libo V'Kol Hashem Edvarucho, because here we're back to Nasu. All that I'm showing you is that we have a whole mishmash, is that a technical word? Of terms which are being used here throughout this section. Don't you appreciate how out of nothing I've made this, that there are problems here? Yeah, out of clarity I've created confusion. But again, it's just paying attention to the words which are being used over here. Right. And they'll do this with their wisdom. The Nisim would leave something for them. Pasuk Kaf Tet. Kol ish v'ishar asher nadav libam otam. Lavid l'kol hamalacha shetivah shem lasot biyad Moshe. Heviu b'nei Yisrael nadavah l'Hashem. So we have a back and forth between different terms being used. We have a back and forth between men and women. We have some kind of things, men and women, which was not clear at all. And that was what I told you, I think, is the key pasuk, which was Kav Bed, Vayivo Anashim Al Hanashim. So that is really what we need to try to figure out. You can look at Onkelos when you want. I've already showed you his, I don't want to say lack of consistency, but it's, he sort of is just assuming that all these things mean the same thing, and I'm not completely convinced, and as you'll see, other commentaries are not convinced as well. Foremost, we'll look at the Ramban in source number 3. The Ramban says, again, on the Pasuk, which we think is the important Pasuk, V'yavo kol isha shernaso libo, which is, sorry, that was the Pasuk before we were looking for. Yes. Al hachachamim ha'osim malacha yomar kein. So again, Vayavo kol isha sher nas'o libo, v'kol isha nedvarucho. So he's saying now, nas'a libo is speaking about the artisans, not the donors. Without reading the next couple words in the Ramban yet, the thing that would support him is that later on in Pasuk Kavav, when he said, kol hanashim asher nas'a libam otna b'chokhma tavu ata'izim. So that was the artisans. So it sounds as if nadav lev is somebody whose spirit moves them with generosity, while nas'u libo, unlike Onkelos, who translated it identically, again, generosity, it sounds like it's actually a different term and a different experience. Because generosity is, I guess it's an emotion which becomes an action. And I would, again, if I would say it comes from the heart, you can say it's fair or it's not fair. But nasu libo is something else. Nasu libo, again, searching for a word, it may very well be an inspiration. Again, it means uplifted. Nasu is to uplift. It means inspiration and creativity, which means somebody who now understands how to do this holy work, which means donating it is one thing. But again, I'm not going to debate now what's more difficult to donate or to do the work. But what I'm getting at is that there is an elevated spirit in both. That the person who's going to give from their own hard work money, or the money that you took from your Egyptian neighbor, whatever the case may be, but again, once something is yours, it's not easy to give. It's not easy for people to go and hand over something which is theirs. So over here, the nediv libo, the person whose heart, they have the spirit of generosity, but that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is post-donation, after it's donated. Now we got all the stuff sitting over here. Now what do you do with it? Now that would have required, again, well-trained artisans. But what we're being told over here is something very interesting, is that what we're being told is that there was this creativity which either existed before or perhaps didn't. It's as if somebody walks in and God says to Moshe, this is what you're doing. Moshe says to people, this is what we have to do. And then somebody just looks at it and has this moment of divine inspiration and understands, you know, this is how we go about doing this, even though they've never done it before. So again, you can tell me, oh, you know what? I know a carpenter like that. You know, I know somebody who's a tailor like that, who they can just look at something and they'll know how to do it. But over here, it seems to be, I'll say maybe perhaps a slightly holier term, Vayuvol kol ish asher nas'ul libo. Let's go continue in the Ramban. Al hachamim ha'osim b'mlacha yomar kein, the nas'ul libo. Ki lo matzinu ala mitnadvim nisiyat lev, because the people who donate, we never saw the phrase nisiyat lev, so again, he's not accepting unkulus. Avol yaskir behem nidivot, the person who donates, it says generosity. V'tam asher nas'ul libo, and the reason why it says that they were uplifted, likirva ela malacha. There was nobody who was an apprentice who learned how to do any of these things prior to this. No one was trained. No one knew what they were doing, according to Ramban. Or somebody who had any kind of practice or experienced this. They suddenly found that in their nature, as it were, they just knew how to do this. And their hearts were lifted. That's nesulibo. Were lifted in terms of the ways of God. And then people just sort of spontaneously came in front of Moshe and said to him, "Okay, I can do that." And Moshe, again, had all these artisans who came and volunteered. But what Ramban is pointing out, if you want to call it a miraculous, I don't know if that's the right word, it is this spontaneous uplifting of spirit to find within them the ability to go and to do this. And as I said, I find this Ramban to be very, very interesting.
Couldn't you say that as Avadim in Egypt,
you could have.
Yeah.
But that's what's interesting, because the Ramban didn't.
No, but I'm saying
that. Right, but why doesn't he say that? Because it's the term that troubles him.
Uh-huh.
It's that he wants to explain the term, asher nasulibo. Because if what you're saying is correct, there's no nasulibo. Somebody said, listen, I worked as a slave for the last 20 years, and I worked as a carpenter, I know exactly how to do this. So I'm going to ask you, so why didn't the Ramban say that? Because he wants to explain nasulibo. He finds the people at that moment were somehow inspired, somehow they were lifted, and they somehow knew how to do this, so therefore he creates that narrative that all these people are working, had no apprenticeship, they never worked on this, they didn't know how to do this, no experience, and then they just walked in and they made the Mishkan. Listen, on the other hand, you could say that these people also had no experience or were never raised as people who donate things. Right? That also comes from this, right? Let's look at source number four. It's the Chatam Sofer. We're jumping lots of generations, and then he continues with the next pasuk. So he puts all of this together. He quotes Yerushalmi. He starts, "Yerushalmi dishkalim karei tagar debal debeegel k'tiv vayitparku kol ha'am uvemishkan rak kol nediv libo or nediv lev." So he's citing over here a passage of the Yerushalmi which he finds troubling. Why is it troubling? Because it makes this unfortunate comparison between those who donated money to the Egel or donated gold to the Egel versus those who donated things now to the Mishkan. And what he notes is that the terminology when they donated to the Egel was so much more visceral. It was stronger. It was vaitparku. They just they emptied out their pockets like the right. They vaitparku. That's what it means. They just threw everything at this egel construction. But when it comes to donating to the Mishkan, it says yeshenadav libo, the person whose spirit was stirred. And the Yerushalmi says, this is not good. Why is it that we're more excited, to spend our money on frivolous, terrible things than we are to spend our money on very nice, holy things? Which means it's almost like when we donate to something which is holy, it's a little begrudgingly, okay, it's the right thing to do, I have to do this. It's the building fund, it's the rabbi's salary, which is very important. It is, when it comes to other kinds of things, then there seems to be much more of an excitement. There's much more of a spirit being stirred, as it were. And as he starts off the Chatam Sofer reciting this Yerushalmi, saying, this is very bad. We get more excitement when we do things which are bad than we get excitement when we do things that we're supposed to do. Yes, this is true, unfortunately. So he continues and he says, Mash v'sheish asher lo hiviu. And when it says, Kol asher nadiv libo, then it sounds like not everybody did it. Those who were moved, donated, other people didn't. But Sarah Ayin Are Kol Mishinimsa Itohivi Mashashem Lo Kidhtiviviu. At the end it sounds like everyone did bring. So we're gonna skip a little bit, and he writes V'chinami kevin shezahava mishkan mechaper ala egel, v'hachotim kvar metu. So just pause for a second. Because this is something which we always really should have been troubled with. You know, God says, I'm, you know, mad at these people, and that's it, I'm leaving these people, I'm destroying these people, I'm replacing these people, they'll be punished for generations, on. But weren't the people who were guilty for doing the egel, weren't they all killed? Wasn't there like 3,000 people killed afterwards? So what exactly was, you know, the demographic of this entire sin? And I know that from our perspective, we're very fortunate because we always have the Erev Rav to blame. Okay, the Erev Rav did it. Okay, let's move on. But that doesn't seem to be enough of an explanation. And again, I'm going to say this again. There seems to be a more of a troubling point over here. Why is the people that remain alive after the chait, what are their levels of responsibility? Which means what he's citing over here is a midrash that says, to a certain extent, and this is going to very much follow our Rashi approach of things, which always hovers in the background, the sequence of events over here. The chait ha'egel is already taking place. And now the people give, and by the way, I don't have to say that. I can say even according to the Ramban that the instructions to build the Mishkan are beforehand, but the actual donations are after the egel. I can still say that. I'm not stuck. Because, again, for the Ramban, everything's the proper sequence. So now, the instructions God said to Moshe were beforehand, but Moshe doesn't relate to the people till now, and the people donate it now. But again, the point of the Midrash is that the donations to the Mishkan come about to fix what was broken by all the donations to the Egel, and he says, well, this is somewhat strange. Now, before we read what he says, just start to think this through. Who donated to the Egel? Was it everybody? What? Okay, so now we have this this approach that we want. Was it the men? So, good. So the right answer is we don't know. But hold on a second. Let me go a little further with that. First question is, who donated? Was it everybody? Was it just the men? Was it some of the men? Was it some of the men and some of the women? Who donated? What's the correlation between those who donated and those who served the egel? What's the correlation between those who donated and those who were killed? So what I'm just saying is that I don't have to say that everything here is about everyone. The problem really is how to understand the verse, which we saw last week. I'll just say quickly. Aaron says very clearly, Lamed Bet, Pasuk Bet, Vayomer Leim Aaron, Perku, which is where that language comes from, you know, throw out me the money almost. Perku nizmei azahav asher bozenei nesheichem b'neichem b'noteichem. Give me the golden earrings, earrings which are in the ears of your wives, sons, and daughters. Which means he actually excluded the men when he made this request. Vivi oilai, and the text says vayit perku kol ha'am. Et nizmei azahav asher bozenei vayaviu el aron. Now, kol ha'am is an unfortunate phrase because it sounds very inclusive. And those of you who want to say, well, but the women didn't sin, well, when they say the women didn't sin, they didn't make the donations, or they didn't sin by virtue of not serving the egel, or so on. I mean, even though at the end where Rashi tells us that everybody then got up, v'kumu l'tzachek, Rashi says, gili arayot, and if none of the women sinned, who were they doing the Gili Arayot with? So don't answer that question because, again, you always have the Erev Rav. I mean, we always can blame them for everything. But I'm just saying is that there is somewhat of a problem. Now, I'm not denying that there is this tradition that we weren't involved in the sin. I'm just pointing out when you say Kol Ha'am gave the gold, it sounds like it was whatever Aaron had asked for, namely the women, the boys, and the girls, and the men themselves. So that seems to be at least what it says. Now, continuing in the Chatam Sofer, he says, Kevin shezahava mishkan mechaper al egel, that we learned in Medrash Rabbah that the donations for the Mishkan come to fix the donations for the egel. And again, that's what he was troubled with from the beginning, is we were more involved emotionally in giving to the egel, more invested than we were in giving to the Mishkan. V'achotim kfar metu. The people who sinned already are dead. V'rak otan shera'u Visamchu Balev. So that I found very interesting. He says the only people still alive were the people who were the observers, watching the scene unfold, and they were happy. Simchu balev. They enjoyed this whole Egel, you know, thing. They were not the people who, again, you have a mass hysteria, then you have those who are actually doing it, and then you have those who are in the background who are enjoying the spectacle. So he's saying now that these people who enjoyed the spectacle, but also notice the phrase, v'samchu balev. They were happy, they were enjoying this as it was happening. V'hayu boshim lavi, but they were the ones who were embarrassed to bring, ki yitgale matzpunam shiyu b'chlal hachotim. They were the ones who were embarrassed to make donations to the Mishkan, because the Chatam Sofer just now set up a problem. He said, if in fact the donations to the Mishkan are coming to heal the sin of the golden calf, then anybody who makes a donation will therefore by association be assumed to have been guilty of the golden calf. Which means, if it weren't for guilt today, and here I don't want to accuse, this will ruin everything I said earlier, if it weren't for guilt, how many yeshivas or shuls or community centers would be built? Is that a terrible thing to say? No. It's not a terrible, it's a terrible thing to say. It's a terrible thing to, it's a terrible thing to say. But what I'm saying is that there's a dynamic sometimes that happens that people who feel guilty for something said, you know what, I'll make a donation to the shul and everything's okay then afterwards. And I think people use the Mishkan like this. What he's saying now in terms of the building of the Mishkan, there's a problem. If the building of the Mishkan is to heal the sin of the golden calf, anybody who makes a donation is going to be assumed to be involved in it. But here he just created this middle category. These people that were passively involved in the Egel needed kapara but were embarrassed to bring the money or bring the gold, because then people would assume that they were completely involved in it and they're someplace in between. So as I said, that became really quite interesting. Al-Kain, kadmu at tzadikim ha-gidolim, therefore first righteous people came, asher nedvurucham. He goes, the people whose spirits were moved. So he's now going back and saying, okay, if there's a certain element that people make donations because of guilt, then everybody is going to be assumed that they have guilt. Therefore, the Torah tells us the first people that donated, asher nidvu libam, the people who were tzaddikim, whose spirit moved them. I want to read that phrase again. Kadmu tzaddikim agdolim otam asher nadvu rucham bikdusha. They're the ones who were moved by holiness. V'kadmu v'aviyu shelo levayesh mi sheyitnanev mehamon am. And therefore, afterwards, those who will be embarrassed because maybe they did something wrong won't be embarrassed because they're just following the footsteps of all the people that were, in fact, righteous. V'lo od ela v'yivu anashim al hanashim, which was the other phrase that I said we have to get back to. Sherei hanashim bevaday lo chatu. V'yidezer v'yikulam nidvatam la'ashem. And here he quotes this tradition that, of course, the women didn't sin. And since the women didn't sin, so then, of course, and that goes back to V'yavo Anashim al Anashim kol Nediv Lev. By the women also, it's Nediv Lev. It goes back to the women who were included in the Tzadikim who never sinned, because this is just their spirits were moved to do the right thing because, of course, as we said, they never sinned. Now, where in the world did we get this idea that the women never sinned? And the answer is, various Midrashim. First of all, source number 5, which is the Pirkei Rabbeinu. Dan Aaron din beino levein atzmo, amar imani omer lahem tnu li kesef zahav biyad him mevi'im. Ela harini omer lahem tnu nizmei nesheichem b'neichem uvenoteichem miyad hadavar batel. So here we have an articulation of what we have long considered, and that is that when Aaron said, if he would have said, just give me a lot of money, they would have done it. But when he says, bring me the jewelry from your wives, literally from the ears of your wives, your sons and daughters, he said, okay, that's the end of this thing. That's just not going to happen. Shenemar v'yom aleim Aaron perku. Shamu hanashim, the women heard, their husbands came and said that, no, we need the gold. V'lo ratzu. And they said, no. V'lo kiblu aleim l'tein nizmeim l'balehim. And they did not agree. They did not agree to give their jewelry to their husbands. Ela amru lahem la'asot shikutz v'toiva she'in bo koach latzir lo nishma lachem. They said to them, you're going to do something which is, again, basically morally, religiously reprehensible. You're going to worship something which cannot help you. We will not listen. We will not be involved. V'natan l'makadosh baruch hu scharam ba'olam hazeh. And God gave them reward in this world as well. Shehin mishmarot roshei chodashim yoter min ha'anashim. So if you've ever heard such a thing, here now you see a black and white. The women were given a present that they are to observe Rosh Chodesh more than men. Now, one of the things that you should all be troubled with is, why is this a reward? What exactly is the correlation? Why Rosh Chodesh? So that's something that I want to try to answer before we finish. Which is also interesting because as in the world to come, also there's going to be some kind of a renewal. So that also is going to help us to understand what is the correlation. Shenemar, and we're quoting from Tehillim, Ra'u anashim shelo shemu anashim, lahem litet nizmeim labalayim. The men saw the women were not agreeing. Me'asu ad otosha asha'a yu anizmeim be'oznehim, kima'aseh mitzrimu kima'aseha aravim. Until then, the men had earrings like other Semitic cultures. They ripped out their own earrings and they gave it to Aaron. And therefore, what the Pirkei Elazar is claiming, that kol ha'am is only the men and not the women. And you recognize that just as easily could have said kol ha'am is the women as well. And the Pirkei Elazar is saying that's absolutely not the case. Asher ba'oznehim in k'tivkan ela asher ba'oznehim. So notice, vidpu kol ha'am et Nizmei Azahava Sherba Oznehem, they're claiming in their ears it's only the men and not the women. Is this the easiest argument? No. But this is the argument that's taken. We find something similar in source number 6, Midrash Agadah, V'yu Anashim Ala Nashim, again on our Pasuk. Ma Balu Lamdein, what has come to teach us? Ki Amri Yisrael B'mayit Chaper Avon Prikat Nizmei Nishotenu Banenu Uvinotenu Ashenetnu La'asot Eloi Zahav. By the way, did you notice that? It's a little different. How are we going to be healed for the sin of giving over Nizmei Nishotenu, giving over our wives, our sons and daughters' earrings? V'kevin shekilam Moshe miyad bo anashim al anashim v'viyu chach v'nezim l'chaper anaf shotechem. And therefore they brought these other pieces of jewelry in order to heal. Now, what this is claiming, and it's a little bit between the lines, but it didn't say the women didn't sin, but let's assume that it says the women didn't sin. But it said something else. It says, Ki amru Yisrael v'yamnachem prikat nizmei nishotenu, which means the men donated their wives' earrings. That may make it a little worse, actually. It didn't say the women did it. It says the men donated their wives' earrings. And therefore, I just want to read that pasuk again so that we don't miss what he's telling us. Read pasuk kaf bet. V'yavo anashim al anashim kol nadiv lev. And the men came with the women, or however we're going to translate this al. Right, kol nadlev, whoever again wanted was of spirit to give. Heviu chach v'nezim v'tabat v'kumaz kol klei zahav. But what doesn't it say there? It doesn't say earrings. Why doesn't it say earrings? Because the men already grabbed all the earrings and donated, because that's what Aaron asked for. Which means that it's that over here it says any woman who was of spirit to give and felt this sense of wanting to give. But they donated all these other gold things, but it didn't say earrings. So over here, the second midrash is saying that's exactly what this means. And again, unless I'm reading too much into it, and it continues and it says, "And but this is part of the kapara." V'viuchach v'nezem. No, I take that back. What I just now said, because it does say chach v'nezem. So yeah, it does say chach v'nezem. But it's again, I'm going to say it's interesting because this midrash says that they did give the nizamim from their wives. So I guess they. It could be another thing. It could be that he says, give me the ones which are in your ears right now, which actually shows a little bit more subservience, as it were, and that you're giving over to this idol. But their other gold things that they had that they weren't wearing at the time is what they didn't give. I think that's the proper way to understand it. And then it says, Heviu chach v'nezem l'chaper nafshotechem. The chach and the nezem bring about forgiveness for their souls. Chach yikaper ma'asei adam. Chach that will heal their actions. V'nezem yichaper al shmiat oznam, on that they listened. V'kumaz hudfus harechem. Now the kumaz, in case we don't know what it is, it's most likely somehow related to what perhaps we can call today a chastity belt, but it says hudfus harechem. That has to do with the womb. V'yichaper al mikoram, and it goes back to the very essence of a woman in a sense, mikoram, the source. B'shvil shelo nizaru badam nida, because they weren't careful at Nida. Now, where in the world do they come to blame the women in Nida in terms of all of this? So I'm going to leave that now, but obviously that's something which is quite strange that we're not familiar with. The other source in source number 7, a midrash in Parsha Pinchas, when Benot Slavchad come over and they want to go to the land of Israel, which the midrash is understanding as a counter move towards in relationship to the spies who didn't want to go to Israel. Oto ador yunashim godrot masha nashim protzim. The women were careful where the men were not. Shekacha tamotzi she'amar lehem Aaron pekud nizmei hazahav v'lor netzrotzu hanashim umichu b'baleim. The women did not want to give the gold and they protested. And then he goes and quotes the verse. And Hashem lo nishtatfu b'maseh egel. And the women were not involved in the sin of the egel. V'chein b'meraglum shotzi dibam v'yashuv elinu alav kol ha'ida aleihem nigzera gzera v'lo nashim lo hayu umam be'itza. The women were also not involved in that sin of the spies. So over here, this Medrash and Tchuma says the women were not involved in either one of those sins. So going back, just to focus on what I'm still troubled with, is the turn of phrase, Vayavo Nashim al Hanashim. In source number 8, the Ramban says, the reason it says this is because the women normally have the jewelry. Just quite practically. V'tam Vayavo Nashim al Hanashim, Bavur Ki Enadava, B'tachshitim, Ayam Mitzuya Eitzel Hanashim. Yoter. Women have more jewelry than men, and that's why the phrase puts it that way. Possibly true, but that depends if they gave everything or only gave the things that were actually in their ears at the time. But then he continues and he says, the women came first. Which means he's saying, who led the march towards Moshe to donate the gold for the Mishkan? The women came first. They were the first ones to go. They were the first ones who were interested. And that is ultimately what the Ramban is saying, is the turn of phrase back in Pasuk Kabbalah, Vayavo Hanashim al Hanashim. The men went in tow as the women went. The women went and the men tagged along after them. So again, the Ramban is saying, A, it talks about the women because they have the gold, but two, they also had the spirit. So therefore, just to read it again, how this was actually implemented, this is what happened. Vayavo Hanashim al Hanashim kol nediv lev. Which means, it means the women were the ones who went and the men tagged along. Rashi writes, in source 9, Pasuk Kaf Bet, Al Hanashim, Im Hanashim, Hasmuchim Aleihem. So it's not clear which way Rashi goes. Smuchim, they're again, together. Rashi writes, Chach hu tachshit shel zahav agol, Natun al hazroa, V'huat samid, V'kumaz, Klei zahav hu natun k'neged oto makom le'isha, V'otenu prashu shem kumaz, Kam makom zima. Which is also interesting in terms of the preparedness to accept such a gift. But I do also want to consider for another moment, what if there really is a chastity belt? What in the world does this mean? There is a reference next week, maybe we should leave it for next week, but that has to do with the donation of the mirrors, and that's Rashi in source number 10, that when they wanted to donate the mirrors, then Moshe hesitated and said, how can I take something which was used for something so unholy, for holiness? And God said, no, I don't agree with you, that ultimately this is holiness as well. We'll look quickly at source number 10. B'merot ha-tzva'ot, b'not Yisrael yu b'yadam mar'ot shira'ot b'hen kishehen mitkashtot, v'avotan lo ikvu milahavi l'nidvat ha-mishkan. And even their mirrors, they went and donated. V'yama'us Moshe b'hen. And Moshe found this inappropriate. B'mnei she'osim li'etzahara, because he felt that this is something where one is giving into the etzahara. Amalo Kodesh Baruch Hu, kabel, accepted. Ki elu chavivin alay min akol. Because this is something which I accept more than anything else, which is very interesting. And I'm just reading this back to the Kumaz as well, to the Kumaz and to the mirrors. There's also another thing I'll remind you of. There is a Gemara in Masechet Yoma that speaks about the day that they prayed to remove the Yetzer Hara when the second Beit HaMikdash was built. And there the Gemara describes it as like a lion or image of a lion came roaring out of the Holy of Holies. So that's the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. So it's very interesting to me that the force or the energy of this is something which was in the Holy of Holies, because you would not have thought that was the appropriate place. Source 11, the Ibn Ezra, will weigh in on the Vayavo Anashim al Anashim, Achar Shebo Anashim. First the women went, and then the men, not that they tagged along, as we saw the Ramban implied, but rather that the men went, and then they went. Vayesham or Aldat Anashim. And the other opinion is the women decided. So what's emerging out of the various commentaries over here is that, A, you know, going back to that Pirkei d'Rabbi-Lezer and other places, the women were not involved in the sin at all. If they're not involved in the sin, then why are they involved in this? Because they don't need the kapara. So let's hold off on that for a moment. The Dat Zakenim Balei HaTosfot and the Rush in source 12 and 13 say the same thing, almost word for word. So much so, I don't know why I even left both of them. And they do go back to the women over here donated. Let's just read the Rush. Vayavoa anashim, klomar l'shlo tachshlitim shayu al anashim shahoyu lochim tachshikin dechativ chach v'nezem, and so on. Hayu anashim smechot v'zihirot v'malchut shamayim. Kidechativ v'kol anashim asar libam otna l'fichach zachu anashim shlo l'sam alacha b'rosh chodesh l'fisha b'maseh egel lo keach mayem tachshitin ba'al korchan. Kidechativ v'itkud nizmeh zahav d'mashma ba'al korchan. Now he took that Pirkei d'Rabbi-Lezer and he just flipped it on its head. And I hope you noticed what he did. He said that when it came to the egel, the women's gold was also donated, but not by them. The men took the gold, stole their wives' chet egel just got worse, right? Stole their wives' jewelry and donated the jewelry over there, and they had no say in this. The husband just forced them. I mean, it's completely inappropriate. But when it came to the donation now for the Mishkan, that the women did, that they led the way, and that they did, you know, with complete, again, nediv libo, generosity of heart, generosity of spirit, which was lacking by the ego. And he goes further, and he says, and now they had total joy as they were giving it. This brought them, you know, bliss and happiness as they were giving it, and that's why God gave them this extra holiday of aspects of Rosh Chodesh. So it's interesting, because the way the Pirkei d'Rabbi-Lezer said it, because they didn't participate in the Egel, is why they got Rosh Chodesh. And over here, the way the Rosh is saying it, is not because they didn't participate then, is because they did participate now, but it's more than that. It's not just the participation, it is the feeling that they had. And I just want to go back to what we'd seen earlier, that there was this comment about, I believe it was the Chatam Sofer, regarding those who didn't actively serve the Egel, but they were happy when it was taking place. They were enjoying it as taking place. So over here we see the inverse of that, that the women were happy to give of this, and the generosity was there, and this is what brought them this spirit. But again, why Rosh Chodesh is something which should be, again, in the back of our minds and something which should concern us. Let's take a look at 15, the Al-Sheikh is going to go similar along the same lines that we've seen, is that everyone was told that they can give, towards the bottom where it's underlined, L'saper shevchan shelo dai shelo natnu chelek be'egel ki im shegam b'nidvat ha-mishkan, im she'anashim lo shamu mi-moshe rak anashim, ki alo v'yatsu kol da'pneisim olifnei Moshe, shehem anashim ha-mitzuvim, v'im kol ze b'hava'at ha-nidava, anashim kadmu al-anashim, o kol asher nasu libo. He's claiming that when Moshe gathered the people, it was the men who were gathered. He's claiming that that particular phraseology was talking about the men. The men were gathered together, the men were told to give the donations, but nonetheless, when the women heard about that, they're the ones who marched first, and they're the ones who went and gave these donations. In source 16, we're also going to have the Al-Sheikh, and I want to read towards the end. It's on page number 4, second paragraph. And he quotes a midrash which eluded me. It's particularly frustrating because, at least in the parentheses here, it told me where to find it. And I looked where he told me to find it, but I just didn't find it, which either means that there were other versions of it that I couldn't find, or that he let his imagination fill in some of the details, which I don't see. But let's read it, because to me this may, first of all, it's fascinating. Secondly, maybe it will help us a little bit more in putting this whole topic together. Moreover, regarding this point that the women went first and then the men, the women were leading the way, they were giving the donations. Back to that phrase that I kept telling you was the key phrase. What does it mean, al hanashim? And if we pause there for a second, how do just the words themselves, and don't worry about implications. How does it sound differently when it says vayavo ha'anashim achar vayavo? Just read it again, vayavo ha'anashim achar hanashim, which is the way a number of the commentaries have said they come after the women, versus saying vayavo hanashim al hanashim. What does al hanashim literally mean? On top. So that's what troubles him. And again, and he says, let's read the words. V'anashim al anashim v'lo omar achar anashim. V'gam hayalu lo omar v'yaviu v'lo v'yavou. Achine yadanu mi rabotenu, and sometimes you have to be careful, because sometimes it's not the author who puts this in, but it's whoever put together that particular edition tells you this is the right citation, and sometimes they get them wrong. But as I said, I looked it up, I did not find this. Here it says, look at the Tanchuma, Parshat Kitisa. Kishachat'u ha'anashim be'egel, when the men sinned with the egel, na'alu delotehem, the women locked the doors, uprishu behem, and they separated from their husbands. Va'omram kinishtamdu, you have now basically converted to a different religion. V'chazru achar hatikun v'tshuva, and they only let them back after they went through a tikun and went through a tshuva. Now that's phenomenal what he just now said. He said, again, let's just think about the politics, which of course he turned into a sexual politics. Those of you who are familiar with Aristophanes, yes? I guess not. Lysistrata is a play. The most famous example of a sex strike in the arts is the Greek playwright Aristophanes' work Lysistrata, an anti-war comedy. The female characters in the play, led by the Lysistratus, right, withhold sex from their husbands as part of their strategy for peace and the end of the Peloponnesian War. Sorry for giving anybody ideas. It sounds familiar. An Israeli playwright, Anat Gov, she also copied this the last couple of years as part of an anti-war gesture. But I want to go back and to think about this for a moment. Because again, this is interesting. And it's interesting both in terms of the metaphor and perhaps the reality, because we're taking it on a pshat level. On a pshat level, what does it say? It says that essentially, let's move towards the Al-Sheikh's time, right? What choice do we have? The Al-Sheikh lives in Tzfat in the 16th century. Many of the people in the Al-Sheikh's community or children or grandchildren of people went through the Spanish or Inquisition or the expulsion from Spain or from Portugal. There are people among them of children or grandchildren of people who converted by force to Christianity. And there were questions about re-entering into society afterwards. What happens if a whole family left? How do you become Jewish again? No, of course, you all know if you're a Jew, you're always a Jew. You never lose your Judaism, so what kind of question is that? But it does become a very interesting question. What happens if a husband did become baptized and now wants to come back to his family? What would happen? What would happen if the wife says, do not do that under any circumstances? What does this do to the whole family dynamic, and how do you re-enter the community? So that's something where Poskim did deal with this question, and I'll admit that part of the treatment, I believe, is halachic, and part of it, I think, is going to be psychological, because sometimes you need a process to go through. I mean, so there are those who will say you need to go to mikveh. Why do you need to go to mikveh? I mean, technically, what does mikveh have to do with this? But nonetheless, there needed to be some kind of a process where cleansing takes place, and then I think that there's actually, if you give somebody something to do, there's actually a great deal of chesed involved in that. Right now you have guilt. Okay, go to the mikveh, you'll be purified. Okay, so there's something very, very good about that. It's very, very human. And over here, it's so interesting to hear the Al-Sheikh read this into the narrative by saying that once the men sinned with the golden calf, they shut the doors and they said, no, you know, I'm not married to you. But I want to go back to what I said from the very beginning, was this theme of the marriage between God and the Jewish people and the Mishkan, the place to live. And that's the whole, you know, issue, which is, again, beneath the surface. But first, let's read the next line or two in the Al-Sheikh, because it's completely fascinating what he does. It's on page 4, second paragraph, and where it's underlined, we'll read again. Kikishachatu anashim be'egel na'alu delotehim. The women locked the doors. Upirshumehim. And they separated from the husbands. But Omran, as they said, ki nishtamdu. You know, you became mishumadim. You've converted, as it were. You've threatened non-belief. V'chazru, they only returned achar hatikun, after it was fixed, v'tshuva. V'zeh achshov nirmaz b'torah. And he goes, and I think that this midrash that I couldn't find, that he claims is in the Tanchuma, I think it's hinted to Ramash Nifridu b'meshe hifrid bein nazam l'kumaz, where it said the women, all the gold was brought, and the list was the chach, right? And then it says the nazam and l'kumaz. L'rumoz ki al esek of the nezem, or the nazam, the nezem zahavam, because of the nezem, which they donated for the egel, na'alu delotehim, they locked the doors, v'yitperdu, and therefore, and they separated, ad shiru shetiknu, v'yitnu Hashem k'neged chamisha v'kor, az nidakulahem, v'zeh ramaz, ba'amru teda l'mashav yu'an Hashem al'anashim, That again, Hanashim al Hanashim. He's taking the man on top of the women, literally giving you a sexual vision or image. Until they finally gave, what else did they donate afterwards? They donated the kumaz. And what is the kumaz? The kumaz is the chastity belt, which means that's no longer necessary because the husbands now have returned, so now they can donate the chastity belt over to the Mishkan. But as I said, reading this as he's saying, you know, this may be the, even on a pshat level, but I'm saying there's a whole nother level to this. And that is the level of that God of the Jewish people, there's supposed to be a union over here, and we basically cheated on God with the egel. And when we cheat on God with the egel, what does that do to the marriage? What does that do to this ceremony, the Naseh v'Nishma, when we took our vows? What does it do to when God says, you know, you're going to be, for me, a special, you know, treasured nation? All that is broken by the egel, especially when they turn and, you know, they flirt with this egel and they worship this egel and on. But the women are saying no. Now, the interesting thing about Rosh Chodesh, I just wanted to get back to that and we'll end. The interesting thing about Rosh Chodesh is Rosh Chodesh points towards, first of all, in terms of the moon itself, that there are cycles of the moon. There are times that the moon disappears. There are times that it's full. There are times that there's a little bit of a sliver. Rosh Chodesh is the beginning of hope again. It had disappeared. There was separation. And now the moon appears, and now it moves towards this full, towards becoming full. Also between a relationship between a husband and a wife in terms of the laws of Nida and so on, which was interesting because we saw something about Nida there in the background that we had no idea what it was doing there or how it should be understood. But if we think there's also going to be a time of unity and a time of separation, and there's going to be an ebb and a flow, which is going to be similar to this whole process of the moon, which essentially the moon is a time of, the new moon is a time of hope, and it's a time of reconciliation, and it's a time that of realizing that things are going to work out, even though during the time where the moon is completely disappeared, it's a time of darkness, it's a time of not knowing what's going on. So it's so interesting that it seems to be saying that the women understood that there is a process over here. The men jumped at the moment, right? They forgot everything. They were taken away by the moment, passion of worshiping the egel, either those actively involved or even those on the side who were just happy with what was going on, and they lost the larger context of the relationship with God. Or to quote a great band in the 60s, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, if you can't be with the one that you love, then love the one you're with, which is essentially what they did with the egel. Which means instead of, no, hold it, but the relationship with God is the true relationship. The relationship with God is the one that we should be keeping our vows. But the women seem to have understood better that there is this passing fancy and there's this young, good-looking calf, and they're doing the wrong thing, and they know they're doing the wrong thing, and the woman's response is, very good, we're locking the doors. So it's so interesting, this image of, I don't know how you lock the doors of a tent anyway, we're locking these doors, but then within the same verse over here, you have this concept of this chastity belt there. So I'm just saying that then became this fascinating connection. But I'm saying don't leave it only on the level between the men and the women in terms of that, you know, politic or relationships that are taking place, turn it into the macro of what's going on between God and the Jewish people at this point. Is God locking the door on them? Is God saying that, no, that's it, I'm not going to be with you. There's going to be no more intimacy anymore. But then just like the new moon comes and then there's hope, then we see the sliver and then becomes a full moon. No, there's going to be the building of the Mishkan and something else is going to happen. Of course, unfortunately, we know that the way that the moon works is that at some point it disappears again and we have Hester Panim, and at some point suddenly we forget about God and then we go off into exile and so on and so forth. But it's just so interesting that the thing that we warded with is the new moon, which is an acknowledgement that there's a much larger process. And it seems to me that that's what the women are understanding. Yes, right now we don't see Moshe. Right now we don't see God. Right now people are frightened. But no, there's a process taking place, and this process is going to work out. And that seems to be what the women, what the various midrashim are saying, understood far better than the men. And that's why the men sin and the women don't. And that's why the women run to give the gold. But which gold they give, as I said, the Al-Sheikh came out with this unbelievable interpretation. If I actually found those words in the Tanchuma, I mean, I'll read the Tanchuma. It's in front of you in Source 17. Amar Lam Aron, Perkun is me.
Okay,
Then he said, go get it from the women. And the women said, God forbid. We saw all these miracles that God did. We're not worshipping idolatry. So all that this Tanchuma said is something we've seen before, that the men sinned, the women didn't sin, but it's more, the women refused to sin. Absolutely not. But that next line, that therefore they locked the doors and kicked them out and said, you know, out of here. You know, this is... And again, the intimacy between the men and the women as a metaphor between the intimacy between God and the Jewish people and building the Mishkan. As I said, I find that completely fascinating. But either the Al Sheikh saw another Midrash, or he knew how to read between the lines far better than I would have. So we appreciate either for his insight or for the text that he has recorded.